We're joined today by author Gary Stewart, who has written the book called The Most Dangerous Animal of All, Searching for My Father and Finding the Zodiac Killer. This is quite a story. Gary, you were adopted, the story is, and then you had a regular upbringing down in New Orleans, in that area of the country. And then when you were 39 years old, your birth mother came back into your life. What was the reason for her reappearance?
You know, she said that for the past 39 years, she had a hole in her heart and just needed to reconnect with the son that she had given up for adoption. So she reached out, and of course, I was anxious to know. Being raised in a wonderful, loving home was the best thing that ever happened to me. However, Ancestry.com and genealogy, those things were just getting kind of to be trendy, and I really wanted to participate, but I didn't have anything. I didn't even have a name.
So at that point, you had had no idea, you know, who your birth parents were. You knew some of, I guess, a little bit of the original circumstances, I suppose. Maybe your adopted parents had some information, but as with many people who are adopted, they're looking to find out, who am I? You know, that's more than just who raised me, but just who am I inside? Where did I come from? That type of thing.
Right, right. So, adoptions in Louisiana were closed sometimes in the 70s, so I had no access to any information other than what my adoptive parents had been given, which was very little. So I wanted to know. So when my mother reached out, I was anxious to meet her. So I flew out to San Francisco and spent almost a week with her. But after the second day, I said, okay, Mom, so who was my father? And that question is one she knew would be coming, and she had spent years preparing herself how to answer that, because she knew more than I knew, of course, and the answers weren't going to be simple. So she basically said, honey, I think his name was Van. I was only a teenager, and he was twice my age. So we had an illicit romance, and we were married, and my mother had the marriage annulled, so we went on the run again anyway. Ended up in New Orleans, and when you were young, I think you were 3 months old, and as it turned out, I was only 4 weeks old. Your father took you by train from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, and he turned you into a church there, and which didn't strike me as odd at all, because, you know, we got safe haven laws and things, but I didn't know that those laws didn't exist in the 1960s here in Louisiana. And basically, I later found out that he actually abandoned me in an apartment building on a stairwell landing. But she says that he came back by train that evening without you, and I immediately left him. So he turned me into the authorities, and I turned him into the authorities for abandoning you, and we all went our separate ways.
So then you decide, okay, now I know who my mother is. You've got some details about your father. What process then took you on kind of just to find out who he is, what happened to him, that sort of thing?
When I first found out that he had left me, I said, you know what? I don't want to know this guy. I've got the greatest father in Baton Rouge. But that only lasted a few months, and so I went back to my mother, who 11 years after her life with my father and myself got her life together and married, remarried to the first ever African-American inspector in the history of the San Francisco Police Department. Yeah, quite an interesting twist there. So He had passed away in the late 90s, and when she found me, he was deceased. So when I asked her to help me find him, she went to his friends and her friends in the San Francisco Police Department. They found his name, date of birth. They found his file, and they gave me enough information to begin a search, but they also warned her that there's information in the file that they would not share with me. So that didn't deter me. I started looking, and within 2 years, I had determined that my father was deceased, that he had abandoned family or family estranged, including three half-siblings of mine, younger, of course, in Austria. And that the information I had, which was limited, was causing a conflict between me and my half-sister in Austria. And I just wanted the truth so that I could communicate with her with some confidence of clarity and quality that the information the SFPD shared with me was accurate. And so I said, Mother, I don't care if he killed JFK. I just need to know what he did so this my sister won't write me off as just some imposter. She went back one time to the SFPD and said, I need to know. I need you to tell me what's in Gary's father's file. And they told her, what's in his file is so heinous it would destroy me and her, and that it would make what he did to me and my mother seem inconsequential. And they asked her to have me tell Gary, just drop this thing. And I did. I was tired, Bruce. I was exhausted. I didn't want to do this anymore. So I dropped it. And 3 months later, July 31st, 2004, I was watching an A&E cold case file program on the Zodiac Killer. And when they flashed the wanted poster from San Francisco from 1969, my heart stopped. My son sees me gazed on the television screen, and he said, hey, Dad, it's you. And I go in my office bring this photo, the only photo I had of my father at the time, which I was told by the SFPD was an old DMV photo, a driver's license photo. Oh. Which turns out it was actually the mugshot from his arrest from the 1962 rape of my mother that I had framed. And I brought it into the living room, and I told my son, Zach, I said, it's not me, Zach, it's my father.
And this, of course, you're talking about, they're showing you that artist sketch of the Zodiac Killer.
Right.
Who terrorized the San Francisco or the California area in the late 60s, early 70s, sending those sort of cryptic notes and messages as well. So at that point, you're kind of getting a sense, probably even kind of that hair on the back of your neck, thinking this is something seems sort of... Then what did you do from that point, maybe assuming or sort of jumping to that situation where you think, my father, there's issues that they're hiding from me, and here's somebody who has a similarity. What was then your process to kind of piece these together?
First of all, I had to deal with what I had discovered and try to determine, you know, what do you do with that? The first thing I did that night was I emailed my mother and I emailed the sergeant in internal affairs at the San Francisco Police Department. I said, okay, it all makes sense now. If I show up in San Francisco tomorrow, will you have a cup of coffee with me and let's talk about this? I just need to know. I never heard from that police officer ever again. And I decided, you know what? If he's not going to cooperate, I'm going to go out and prove that there was no way my father could have been the Zodiac Killer. And I started my journey, which would last more than 10 years, a fifth of my life, to prove that my father couldn't have done this. And everything I discovered along the way validated my worst fear. And I could not find one shred of evidence to exonerate him.
At this point, what does the police department in San Francisco have to say about this? Obviously, you're doing the amateur sleuthing on it. Where does it stand right now?
Their first reaction, of course, was to say, if Mr. Stewart or anybody has any information regarding the Zodiac case, we encourage them to come forward. But they said that before they read the book, right? So hopefully now they've read the book and realized that that was just not the right statement to say, because in the book, I did eventually go to the head of homicide 10 years ago in the San Francisco Police Department. And Lieutenant John Hennessy is a wonderful man and saw my evidence and took it upon himself, even though the Zodiac case was closed, to go against the grain and ask for a voluntary sample of my DNA so he could compare that to what the San Francisco Police Department has on file for the Zodiac Killer. So I came forward 10 years ago, and now with my book publication, I'm coming forward again. And even just as recent as yesterday, my biological mother reached out to the cold case inspector in the SFPD and says, look, I want answers. I want to know why Gary's DNA was never compared and or his father's file was destroyed. I want to know what the cover-up was. I want to know the truth. And he insisted to my mother that he takes this very seriously, and he's going to follow up any and every lead, including my mother's and my book.
We'll see where this continues on. Again, the name of the book is The Most Dangerous Animal of All, which I was looking. I guess that came from one of the ciphers that he sent. The actually, the Zodiac Killer put that in one of the reasons why he enjoyed killing people, I suppose.
That's right. That's where the part of the title came from. The other part is that I watched Joe Kenda, Homicide Hunter, this past year, and I read a story about him. And he said when he was 8 or 9 years old, his parents took him to the zoo looking at all these dangerous animals, and he said, around the corner, there's a sign that says, around this corner, you will find the most dangerous animal of all. And he walked around the corner only to find a full-length mirror.
I think I've passed a place like that where they've had a sign of that sort. It gives you a moment to pause, I guess. It's called The Most Dangerous Animal of All, Searching for My Father and Finding the Zodiac Killer. Our guest today, Gary L. Stewart, also writing with the book, Susan Mustafa. Gary, thank you for sharing the time and this interesting story with
Bruce,
us.
Bruce, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.